Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 341. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's your weekend, bud?
It's been good. Just another good one. Just taking it all in, the last second to last full weekend of baseball until the postseason, at least. We got one more weekend of MLB coming up, and it's all done, which is crazy.
You guys doing any fall activities down your way yet?
Nope, not yet, but we'll get there. Still a little warm.
Yeah. How big is it up here in Maine? Obviously, it gets colder. You get into that fall feel, apple picking and pumpkin patches and all that. Is all that stuff as popular down your way?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to go to North Carolina, like Hendersonville, Asheville, but it's not too far. Nice. I guess where all the apple orchards are. This is about an hour drive there. But yeah, we've got pumpkin patches, like all kind of farm stuff going on around. It's plenty of that.
I'm sure Hayden loves all that stuff too.
Oh yeah.
And that's the thing is I love just taking the kids to all that stuff. And I don't get like super enjoyed by it, but it's just seeing the kids drinking some hot apple cider. It's always a good time. And it's that time of year now. It's today is the first day of fall, isn't it? Or was it yesterday?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I always forget if it's 21st, 22nd, whatever. But by the time you listen to this on the 23rd, it definitely will be in the fall now. As I know it's definitely before the 23rd, but still got another week of baseball. Otani has had 6 home runs and 8 steals just while I was reading this intro. It's been a fun week of baseball here. I want to see Otani go 60-60. He's up to 53-55 after Sunday. So he needs 7-5, which he hasn't had 1 week yet this year. I looked where he's had 7 home runs. He had a couple fives and sixes, but would anybody be surprised if he did it? I wouldn't bet money on it, but I wouldn't be surprised either.
Nope. It's you never know, so I wouldn't rule it out.
I'm just glad in my one head-to-head league, thankfully the guy, my buddy that has Otani, did not make the playoffs, so no having to worry about facing him. So that would have been real headache for whoever had to face Otani in head-to-head this week, but all right, this is our last week of 2 episodes. As the season ends, we will drop down to 1 episode starting next week. And that'll run through at least October, November, and December is when we pick back up into 2 or even 3 episodes a week as we get into our rankings and all that fun stuff leading into the preseason. But we're finishing off the year as we did last year with our minor league players of the year. We're doing American League this episode. National League will be on Thursday. We're going team by team. We each picked one, but really only one of us will talk about our pick, and the other one will just say, I picked this person, maybe give 10 seconds, but it'll primarily just be one of us talking for each team. We did overlap on some, forcibly pick different players for each team, but we overlapped on 8 of them, so right around half, which is pretty normal, I think. Chris will start us off with Baltimore. I'll do Boston, then we'll keep going through White Sox, Cleveland, etc., and then we'll flip-flop it. I'll go first next episode with Arizona. So pretty fun episode. And one caveat here, these guys have to be still prospect eligible, as we did last year. So keeping it, so guys, even if they graduated a few weeks ago, they are ineligible. Only guys that are still prospect eligible, if they debuted, fine. As long as they're under those 130 and 50 thresholds, they were still eligible. Before we get into the all the winners here, we will get to the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolshedPod. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more from each of us. That's where all of our rankings live, and we're both planning on doing a ton of content at each of those places this offseason, so make sure you check it out, subscribe. Definitely appreciate all the support. And, of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Baseball season might be coming to an end here, but plenty of football content, basketball, hockey, whatever your little heart desires, RotoBaller's got it. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get your 10% off any premium package over at RotoBaller.com. All right, Chris, you want to kick us off with the Baltimore Orioles?
Yeah, I actually thought there would be a few more options, but the only one that I could land on was Kobe Mayo. He was quite good all season. Obviously, his small major league stint didn't go great, but I'm not going to hold that against him, because in 386 plate appearances this year, 290, 368, 569 slash, he hit 22 home runs, had a ton of extra base hits, and 23 doubles and 3 triples to add to those 22 homers. Mayo's season was just really solid all around. He did miss a little bit of time, but you look, and I think that if you're worried about Kobe Mayo based on the small sample of major league time, I just say don't be. I know that sounds silly to say, but Mayo checks all the boxes at this point, and he's going to be a power hitter. He makes enough contact where I think you can feel okay that he's not going to be a bust or anything of that nature. It's not like somebody that, you know, we propped way up and then he's just going to falter. I really think that he's going to be a consistent power hitter for the long term. Contact rates ran about an average below or better than average chase rates, and the power was easily plus 107 mile an hour ninth percentile, you know, near 91 mile an hour average EV. That'll absolutely play. So yeah, I really, going into it, I thought there'd be some competition, and Basayo was good. You know, I wanted to go a pitcher who I really love, Nestor Hermann, but he went through 70 innings, landed on Kobe Mayo, which seems like the obvious answer, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I tried to go somewhere else. I mean, Mayo was, you know, obviously the biggest name in the system. You could make a case for Basayo and maybe one or two others, but yeah, it's Kobe Mayo, and I would not be scared off either by his, you know, debut. Yeah, there are some swing and miss issues that have happened throughout his career. He was doing better earlier this year, but those have popped up here and there, but not overly worried about that whatsoever. So Kobe Mayo for me as well. Going to the Boston Red Sox, and this was tough. It's like the two big options here. Do you go Roman Anthony or do you go Christian Campbell? And while I have Anthony ranked ahead of Campbell, they're both top 10 overall for me. Anthony currently 3, Campbell 8 or 9, I forget. And Anthony's the number 1 for Baseball America at this point. Looking at who had the better 2024 season, yeah, I would give the, you know, slight edge here to Christian Campbell. And it was maybe one of the better all-around seasons we've seen in a long time in the minor leagues. Look at, he did everything well this season offensively. And I even looked at it last week or so. He is the first minor leaguer since it was Cole Calhoun, and I want to say like 2011 or so. It had been roughly a dozen years, give or take, to have 20-plus doubles, 20-plus home runs, 20-plus steals, and a 320-plus average in a season. Tucker almost did it. He finished a couple doubles shy or something like that back in whatever year it was, 2016. But this year, Campbell won 330, 439, 558 in 115 games across 3 levels, 32 home runs, 32 doubles, 20 home runs, 24 steals, 74 walks to 103 strikeouts. He checks off all the boxes when I look for a top 10 caliber fantasy prospect, and whether you want to rank him there or not, he's definitely one that I think is in consideration given what he's done. You know, coming into this year, he was thought of as a good contact and speed guy, but the power was a question mark, but definitely made a lot of gains there. Had an EV above 90 miles an hour, hard hit rate above 40% in AAA, and he gained all that power without sacrificing contact, without sacrificing approach to the plate, getting too long with a swing, with a rising K rate, which we often see happen for guys that add a considerable amount of power. Sometimes is that trade-off. That did not happen with Christian Campbell, and that makes me even more excited about what he can do in the future. Add in a great home ballpark in Fenway, add in a lineup that should be pretty good. We'll see what the moving pieces are next year to get O'Neill as a free agent, and obviously all these young guys, they're trying to fit in. Some of them might get traded, but he's going to be if he's still there in a good park and a good lineup, and if he's playing second base, this is a really fun profile from second base. So guy that went 2020 this year will hit in 330. He is my minor league player of the year with a strong honorable mention going to Roman Anthony.
Yeah, I say Christian Campbell, probably minor league player of the year. He was by far the top performer on WRC plus standpoint for all minor leaguers, excluding like the short season guys. But he was just insane what he did. A 180 WRC plus, next highest for full season ball qualified hitters, 160. So yeah, pretty nuts. Go from high A to triple A. Do what Campbell did. Really good. To the White Sox. Yeah, there was, I think, one clear-cut one, even though there were several really good performers. I went with Noah Schultz. He was dominant all year. He went to double A and got better. Yeah, could be a product of the environment. Southern League was very pitcher-friendly this year. I wish they would let the reins go on him a little bit. It's a little frustrating to see him continue to go 3 to 4 innings every start. And that's exactly what he did this year. He never threw above 4 innings. That's a little frustrating just to look at and see. He's never gone above 4 at any point in his career. And I just want to see the reins taken off him a bit. Still, he threw 88 innings, had 2.24 ERA, 115K to 24 walks. For a 6'7" guy, 6'9", excuse me, even bigger, the command is really good with Schultz. Strike throwing solid. He checks all the boxes, fastball slider combo being really good. I like Schultz a lot. Yeah, I saw his final high start before he bumped to double and was impressed. He had a pretty big game, forgot exactly the numbers, but he was really solid. The stuff looks good. The command's really solid. And it's just easy. Yeah, I think that's easy to look at a 6'9" guy that's been babied and say reliever. I don't think that's the case here. I think Schultz is going to be really solid as long as he can prove that he can continue to throw innings.
Yeah, there was really no other option. All the other guys that you thought would be top guys in the system didn't really have great years. And Montgomery had kind of a subpar year. Ramos didn't really have a great year. So, yeah, I had to go with Noah Schultz as well. Yeah, we do line up on the first four here, but again, a lot of the middle ones that we differ on. So, not everyone here we will agree on, but again, it was 8 total that we agreed on, and this happened to be the first 4 teams in order that we will agree on, which kind of foreshadows a little bit unintentionally. But Cleveland, I am going with Tugboat Matt Wilkinson. Dude, he fits that nickname and is probably one of the more fun stories of the 2024 minor league season. Finished second overall in minor league strikeouts, only behind Quinn Matthews, who had 202 to Tugboat's 174. But Tugboat also only pitched 118 and 2/3 innings. And that was between low A. So the strikeout rate with Tugboat, absolutely insane. And he only had 37 walks as well. So no real big command and control issues here. He had a 8% walk rate, pretty solid for his age range and level. And then you're looking at a strikeout rate of 37.6%. Just absolutely phenomenal. And that goes with a 190 ERA and a 0.91 whip in 24 starts. 8 of those with low A Lynchburg. in 16 with high A, Lake County. Again, tugboat nickname. It's a fun profile overall, but one that I want. So he doesn't rank as highly as a Quinn Matthews for me, or as high as like a Travis Sikora, or some of these other breakouts pitching prospects from this year, because I don't project him as high as them long term. I mean, I think he's going to be a really solid major league starter, but more like SP3, SP4 range. That's fine. I think people like hear that and think, oh, that's not great, but that's still pretty good and could make him a definitely a fantasy viable starter. Maybe when we see that we see later next year, probably starts in AA. So we definitely see him next summer or in the second half of the season next year. But yeah, he had a phenomenal year. There was several hitters, guys like CJ Cephas had a decent year, Jason Chirio, decent year, Ralphie Velasquez, and none that really stood out. So I had to go with the Canadian tugboat and Matt Wilkinson for Cleveland here.
Yeah, I took tugboat as well, even though I don't even think he's a major league starter. There's just, you look at the arsenal, slider's good, but I everything I see, the pitch metrics, I personally don't believe it's a major league starter long term, okay. But you can't argue with how good the performance was all year. He was consistently the best minor league pitcher. It's just, It is what it is. And so I think he definitely deserves that nod. I thought he may hit a little bump in high A. He didn't. He pitched extremely well all season, near 38% K rate, 8% walk rate, 190 RA and a 2.69 FIPS. He pitched extremely well. I'm not in on Tugboat. I don't even have him as like a top 300 prospect. I know people are like, oh my gosh, what in the world? But it's not a mold of a prospect that I want or actually think is going to work, but can't argue the performance, and he definitely deserves a nod.
Yep. And let me be clear on something with me too. I'm not like super in on Wilkinson. I have him ranked higher than Chris does, but yeah, he's not one that I'm like rushing out to get either. So I just want to make that kind of point clear that I'm not like super in on Tugboat over here.
All right. To the Tigers, there was several ways to go here. There was definitely like, you could go with their top prospect, Jackson Jobe. I did not. I took Hau-Yu Lee. I thought that his season was really impressive. Sad that it ended a bit early. He had a lumbar spine inflammation, back injury basically, that ended his season at the end of August. But he was stellar in AA. He moved over from the Phillies. We saw him in the AFL last year with the Phillies, and I didn't really think there was a lot there, but he made some tangible changes with his swing. The underlying was good. It's good contact. He's got improved power this year. He hit 12 home runs in 386 plate appearances with 16 stolen bases, 851 OPS. So yeah, you could go with a Jackson Jobe, but I look at a Hau-Yu Lee and think, okay, this is a guy that I won't say seemingly came out of nowhere, but he made really good strides this year and had a really good season, 141 WRC plus in AA. That'll absolutely play. So yeah, props to him for the changes that he made. We'll hope the injury's not serious. He's still just 21. There might be something here with Hau-Yu Lee.
Yeah, I considered him as well. There were several I considered. Him, Jobe, Clark, McGonigal. But yeah, Hau-Yu Lee definitely one of the more kind of underrated prospects in baseball, I think. He's been pretty good for a couple years now. But I ended up going with another guy that I think's a little bit underrated, still prospect eligible, even though he already debuted for the Tigers. So I'm going with Trace Sweeney, former Dodger prospect, came over in that Jack Flaherty deal. And I think it's just a sneaky good power speed threat. I don't know if he's ever going to be a guy that hits for a high average. Just has never been that guy. And even in his time so far, zone contact is fine around 84%, but overall contact is below 70, a little bit of a high chase rate as well. But I think he can still hit about 250 or so and be a guy that flirts with 20-20 every year. He's not a burner by any means, but he's a solid runner that's always shown the willingness to run, which I think is definitely important. He had 31 steals back in 2022, only caught three times. He's efficient as well. 2020 was actually his least efficient year. It was 20 out of 27. But this year it was 20 out of 24 in AAA before getting the call to the major leagues. And he's only 2 for 2 so far, but 4 home runs, 4 doubles as well. And the quality of contact has been pretty good in the major leagues, right around 11% barrel, 92-mile-an-hour average exit velocity, and a hard hit rate just a hair under 50%. So if he might not be the sexiest profile around, but enough power speed to flirt with 20-20 annually with an average that won't kill you. I don't think he's a guy that plummets down to 220 or anything like that. I think that Detroit lineup is definitely on the rise. We've seen that team really take off in the second half of the season. Got a lot of good young hitters in that lineup. And I think Sweeney could be pretty underrated value for fantasy leagues moving forward here. So I will give him my nod here for Detroit. All right, so now we move over to Houston here. Houston had a few good options. I went with Shea Whitcomb. Pedro Leon was another good one, and Chris has a good one as well. But Shea Whitcomb, I think, is another guy that's very undervalued, kind of a theme of the last 5 minutes of this episode here. Whitcomb got to the major leagues this year, didn't really do a whole lot with it, only 36 at-bats, but look at what he's done in the minor leagues over the last couple of years. 2021, 2330, hit 293. 2022, went 19-20, average plummeted 219, and his really is a stock plummeted along with it in prospect rankings. 2023, still only hit 240, but 35-20. And then this year, 25-26, got the average back up to 293. Walk rate went up, K rate went down, contact rates kind of returns. So a lot of good in that profile. I still don't think he's going to be a 293 hitter like he was this year in the minor leagues. And he's probably more in that Sweeney range, 250, 260 or so. But definitely has a nice power speed blend. Now, I'm digging the improved approach he showed this year. And guy that can play all over the infield. He's played short, third, second. See if he gets a shot next year, especially if Alex Bregman were to leave via free agency. So we shall see on that front. But definitely a very good all-around profile. And again, he gets undervalued because he's almost 26. He'll be 26 later on this week on the 28th. And guy that had a couple of years of bad averages, but definitely made some tangible improvements this year. So I will go with Shea Whitcomb for here for Houston.
All right. A little bit torn on mine, even though I wrote one down and now I'm debating. Whitcomb obviously had an incredible year. I put Anderson Brito on the sheet and kind of debating whether he pitched enough to actually warrant it. But considering he started the year in the DSL and made it to single A and pitched how he did, I think speaks a lot of volume. 53.2 innings on the year. Brito had a 1.51 ERA, 82 strikeouts in those 53 innings. Just ridiculous. And obviously dominating the DSL is great, but he also came over and struck out hitters in single A too and put up some really good performances. Just corn that he didn't do enough to warrant it, but I don't know. I really look at this profile and think, yeah, I think Brito's a dude. I think he's in a major breakout potential next year. And he had a really solid year overall, even though it was just not a ton of innings, but it was enough, I think, considering his season started at the beginning of June in the TSL and to come over and do what he did. So you could probably go other ways. Brito was the one I went back to when I was looking at through each team or each of the players in the org. And I think Brito's performance like certainly gets some accolades. So I'll take him, even though it feels like cheating just a bit given the lack of innings, but yeah, we'll do it.
There was a few that I was like, I want to go with this guy, but I just didn't feel like he either hit or pitched enough in terms of volume and just to be warranted here. So yeah, there's a few guys like that for me too. But all right, who do you got for Kansas City?
All right, so I took Noah Cameron, left-handed pitcher. Obviously, there was a couple of catchers that I considered, but Noah Cameron was really good. Tossed a ton of innings, 128 combined between double A and triple A this year. Had a 308 ERA, 149 strikeouts to just 36 walks. I thought he made some really good improvements this year. He was one last year that was breaking out early in the year, and he bumped a double and really struggled. Came back after last offseason. The command has gotten consistently better. Strike throwing's really good. I thought the stuff has made a pretty big jump too. He went to triple A and was even better with a 2.32 ERA and a 1.01 whip, which I thought was pretty impressive. Plenty of strikeouts, good command. He He's got a really solid arsenal, not flashy, but from the left side, it's a solid fastball. It's a good curve and change with good command. I think Cameron, just given the consistency all year and his performance, the amount of innings that he threw, the opposite of Brito that I just talked about, where he was churning out innings all season, was pretty impressive, actually. You look at from a quality start standpoint, he absolutely had a ton. He only had two games where he allowed more than three earned runs. Another pretty impressive feat. So I think Cameron is one where it wouldn't shock me at all if he breaks camp with the team next year in the rotation. He's more than ready. He just turned 25. I think he's proved everything he needs to prove at this point.
Yeah, I almost went with Cameron as well. There was a few I debated. I think Blake Mitchell could have been the guy if he didn't struggle down the stretch. You know, Carter Jensen, definitely another deserving candidate. I ended up going with Gavin Cross. It was pretty much a coin flip between a few guys. Cross had a nice bounce back year. Last year really took a lot of the helium out of his prospect stock, hitting 203 with a 298 OBP. Although he did have 12 home runs, 23 steals, and 21 doubles. So he had some good counting stats in 96 games. But this year, 15 home runs, 30 steals, and 101 games. Slash line much better, 261, 342, 428. Did a lot of damage middle of the season, end of the year on the IL. And I'm still not incredibly high on him right now. He has moved back up my rankings. He's a top under 250 caliber guy, something like that. But yeah, definitely not as high on him as I once was. But the one thing here, I wish I had ran with the narrative that he was my cousin's. People caught that when he got drafted. I should have run with that narrative, Chris, and just, oh yeah, he's like my second cousin. See him every couple years of Thanksgiving or something. But no relation. But I will go Gavin Cross here for mine. Let's go over to the Los Angeles Angels, back to back. Just poor systems here. Probably two of the bottom, let me say, Chris, two of the bottom five orgs in baseball in terms of minor league prospect talent.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, sure. They each got a couple of names in the system, but yeah, definitely not a lot of star power here. But going Caden Dana for this one. It's the obvious choice. Spent his entire year in the minor leagues, at least before his call up late in the season at AA Rocket City, where he had a 252 ERA, 0.94 whip, 147 strikeouts to 39 walks in 135 and two thirds innings. You got the long flowing here, like Noah Syndergaard-esque. And he was a guy that I was not low on, but quite as high as most coming into the year. But he definitely really impressed me this year. And I don't think he's going to be an ace or number two moving forward, but I think Dana could be pretty solid number three. Got a good four pitch mix. Really like that slider. Fastball is a good fastball as well. Also mixes in curveball and a changeup. Solid command and control. Walk rate was pretty solid this year after it was over 10% last year between low A and high A. It dropped down to a really solid 7.3% this year. So it was good to see him improve that walk rate, throw more strikes this year. And again, the upside of a number three starter. Just not really high on a lot of Angels' arms, especially it's going to mess up a lot of guys and not get the most out of their pitching prospects. So that's why I was a little hesitant to really invest and rank Dana highly. But I think he had a really good year. And yeah, hasn't really been that good at the major league level yet, but it's only been a couple of starts. So that's not going to alter any of my long-term thought process on him. But yeah, he was definitely deserving of being the minor league player of the year for the Angels. Chris, who you got?
Yeah, no, I just went ahead and took Dana as well. I think he was by far their best and most consistent performer all year. And again, you know, the Southern League, it was definitely much more of a pitcher's environment. But considering at 20 years old, he threw 135 and two-thirds innings at AA. He was an absolute workhorse. 2.52 ERA, sub-1 whip, really good FIP. And he came up to the majors as well. And I know it was not the best debut, but still, we just hope that he can recover fully. I know it's ended with an injury, so I hope it's not too serious. Get him back on the mound soon. I think Dana certainly stands out here.
Absolutely. All right. Over to Minnesota, Chris. Who you got?
All right. So the obvious one here was Zebby Matthews, who's still prospect eligible at this point. But I went with a bat, and I'm taking Peyton Ells, who is like the most improbable candidate to be here on the cusp of a major league debut. He's 5'5", 180 pounds, so very small. It goes against everything that I preach about a prospect. But, you know, considering what he's done this year, I think it's hard to argue against his results. Highest WRC plus in the org, if I'm not mistaken. He was incredibly good all year at every stop. He was started in low A, which is crazy. You know, single A, after not even getting drafted last year, signed a undrafted free agent deal, and then he just absolutely dominates. So between all stops this year, L's 304, 433, 497, equal walks to strikeouts, both at 14.2%. Sure, it's not big power by any means, but he did manage 12 home runs in 464 plate appearances. But it's a very passive eye. He's walking a lot. He had 19 doubles and 8 triples, 38 stolen bases. He just basically provided in every aspect of the game. And I think he's an unsung hero in this org. I think that he's on the cusp of breaking through the majors, and it probably happens pretty soon. A guy that spent 6 years in college, he started out at Cedarville University back in 2019. Excuse me. I think I don't want to misspeak here. I need to recount, but I do think he was in, it was 5 years. I don't want to say six, but he did have 5 years given that COVID year. In 2020, he ended his career at Coastal Carolina last year, was really good, went to Indy Ball, and then signed an undrafted free agent deal. And so, yeah, Peyton Ehlers, that's E-E-L-E-S, really impressive year. I think he takes home the honors for me.
Yeah, good thing you spelled that out, because I think a lot of people out there, even I was like, wait, how do we even spell that? It's a hard name to spell. Double E to start is never easy to spell out, but... Yeah, you know, obviously a really good year for him. Maybe he fits like a super utility role for them. He's played second, third, and short this year. So kind of be interesting to see how they fit him in next year. I could have went with Zebby as well, and I actually started by putting Zebby down. But I'm going to pivot real quick here. Go Luke Kuechel into the year on the IL. Pretty solid year all around from Luke Kuechel. He's played 102 games between high A and double A, 303, 420, 483 slash line. 21 doubles, 15 home runs, 23 steals. And another guy that had a good approach, 62 walks, 80 strikeouts, which is pretty common. That's a trait that you see a lot of Minnesota hitters have these days after having a lot of guys in the past that didn't have all those Aaron Sabatos of the world. That was like the old Twins.
Yeah,
that was the old Twins. The new Twins, you look at Emmanuel Rodriguez, Walker Jenkins, Luke Kuechel, Peyton Ehlers, etc. A lot of good approaches here. So I went Kuechel. I don't think he's going to be big power, but 12, 15 home runs, something like that. Maybe 15 to 18 steals. Not a big runner as well, but a solid runner. And a guy that good contact, good approach. Never going to wow you. Doesn't have that wow profile, but definitely has a major league profile. Guy could be a starter for the Twins. We'll see. They got a lot of moving parts up there, a lot of, especially on the hitting side. So want to see how, I don't know if he'll be, you'll give him the end of the year on the IL. Probably starts off at AAA next year. Maybe he's up mid-season or so, depending on if there's an injury or not, which with the Twins, unfortunately, there usually is. But I will go Luke Kuechel for mine. All right, who are we over to now? Oh, the New York Yankees. All right. So the one that I picked here, I did not want to pick, and Chris can attest to this. That was the last one I put on this list. I had to go back to it twice. I tried everything I could think of to think of anyone else that I thought was a good pick above him. Couldn't do it. So I was like, you know what? Whatever. Went Spencer Jones. Now, we've talked about Spencer Jones a lot on this podcast this year, and most of it has not been positive. We have, obviously, I think we've both acknowledged that it's a fun profile. He's got big power, obviously. And I've seen him hit some absolute tanks, and he's a good runner for his size. You wouldn't think so, but he's a sneaky good runner and athlete, and that's attributed to 17 home runs and 25 steals this year in 122 games for Double A Somerset. And also, he's already hit two home runs the first three postseason games as well, including one today on Sunday. But again, the strikeout rate is a massive concern. Walk rate's right at 10%, which is solid, but there's just so much swing and miss. He was one of two prospects this year
have 200 strikeouts on the hitting side. The other one was Elijah Green. No surprises there. But you look at for a strikeout rate, 36.8% is just not going to get it done. I still have many concerns about him. That's why I've dropped him down. He's not top 100 prospect for me anymore, though he's not far off either because obviously the upside's still there. But I have major concerns that he ever hits enough to fully maximize his upside and maximize that power speed lens he does have. So just because I picked him here does not mean I'm like endorsing him. Oh, go out and get Spencer Jones, because I think there's still that major red flag in the profile that needs to be corrected before I'd be willing to really invest here. But fun profile, but I couldn't think of any other one to go ahead of him, for me at least. But Chris, you seem to have found one that you put ahead of Spencer Jones.
Yeah, this is definitely your non-traditional one, and that's Ben Shields, who had a really good year, 25-year-old, left-handed arm. He's a bigger frame, 6'4". He was really solid all year between high A and double A. He did make one triple A start. It was randomly thrown in back in May, where he jumped from high A to triple just for a start, and it was atrocious. It was 7 earned and 1 2/3, which kind of threw everything off tremendously, but he still had a 3.48 ERA across 106 innings, 137K to just 33 walks. That's really solid stuff there. Last start in double A, finished out the year, he struck out 10 across 4 2/3, 1 walk, 3 hits, 1 earned. Pretty impressive numbers there. And really, you just take out that one bad start, and it was a really good season overall. I could calculate, obviously that's completely cherry picking, but again, they jumped him from high A in the next start in the same week. That's typically not something we see, but in the same week, he went to triple and made a start. So that's a pretty substantial jump that, yeah, I'm not sure he was ready for at the time, but still, that's how it shook out, and it was not good. It's still on the ledger, but you take out that one start, 1 2/3, 7 earned runs, and then we're looking at a 2.93 ERA. So go from a 2.93 to a 3.48 in one start is pretty wild, but kind of shows you how much damage that one did. He misses bats. It's an interesting arsenal. Yeah, I'm not looking at Ben Shields and saying like this is a top prospect or anything, but largely this Yankee system underperformed. And I think that you look at Ben Shields and I say he overperformed actually. So yeah, I'm pretty intrigued by what he did.
All right, over to Oakland, Chris.
Yeah, this one was pretty easy for me. And it's Colby Thomas, who just had an absolute insane year. He was great last year, and he put up some really big numbers. Extra base hit numbers last year stood out towards the top of minor leagues, and you know, he took it to another level this year, which is just pretty insane. 31 homers, 44 doubles, and 5 triples. You do the math there. That's 80 extra base hits. That's absolutely nuts in 131 games. He had 80 extra base hits and 60 singles. That's crazy. 275 average to pair with that. He stole 15 bases as well. Good on-base skills. He's not chasing too often. It did trend upward in AAA, but the walk rate was fine. He makes decent enough end zone contact to make up for it. A 905 OPS there. Pretty solid year for him. And a 131 WRC plus. I look at Colby Thomas. He's more than ready for the majors at this point. The bat's going to play. He's proved it 2 straight years. Oakland's outfield, suddenly a little crowded, but I do think that Thomas has been spectacular, and he certainly deserves the love.
Yeah. This was easy for me too. I went Colby Thomas as well. And I quickly just did the calculations on extra base hits here. Thank you, Fangraphs. So yeah, he led the minors with 80 extra base hits, as Chris alluded to, 44, 5, and 31. That was over 10 more than anybody else. Then you get down to this cluster in the mid 60s. Davis de los Santos had 67 for Arizona and Miami. Tim Tawa, who I'm sure nobody's heard of for the most part, had 67 as well. Ryan Ward, the Dodgers, had 66. Adrian Del Castillo, okay, a lot of D-backs there, or former D-backs, I should say, too, had 65. And then Juan Brito, 61. And those are the only ones over 60 this year. But yeah, he was head and shoulders above anybody else in terms of extra base hits. Yeah, it's a very easy one to go him there. And yeah, he probably would have been up if it wasn't for the crowded outfield now with the emergence of guys like Rooker and Lawrence Butler. But probably should get his shot next year. Going over to Seattle now, so keeping it in the AL West, going to Michael Arroyo, who I've always been fairly high on, and I think it's pretty underrated coming into this year, but I see why. The power was a question mark, and still doesn't have great power, but doesn't have that one tool either, like anywhere across the board, that really stands out. But he just does a bit of everything, and he did that this year. 285, 400, 509 slash line, 26 doubles, 7 triples, 23 home runs, 18 steals, only caught 6 times. K rate, maybe a little high, but not terribly high. 136 strikeouts, 120 games, but also had a walk rate around 12% as well. Look at this profile from the second base position. That's where he's played. He's played a little bit of shortstop every year, but primarily has been a second baseman throughout his minor league career with the Mariners, where he's been for the last 3 years now. Debuted in the DSL back in 2022, and he just really hit everywhere he's gone for the most part, outside of his initial time in low A Modesto back in 2023. But the power increasing this year is, you know, solid power speed blend. Maybe a guy that flirts with 2020 won't be massive in that area, but he can hit for a solid average. He can get on base. There's no real big red flags anywhere in this profile, and I think he's just a well-rounded offensive player. And I think he's getting slept on. I have him as a top 50 prospect. I think even top 40. I want to say he's in that 35 to 40 range for me, and one of the top second base prospects in the game, and won't be up next year, probably double A, maybe a little triple A next year. But 2026, I think you could see Michael Arroyo in that Seattle lineup. If he's still there, maybe they trade him, who knows. But definitely a very exciting young prospect. Won't be 20 for another about 2 months or so. He won't be 20 until November, so I am going with Michael Arroyo for Seattle.
Same. He's been really good. He defies the odds as a smaller second base profile that's just been consistently good all year. Solid underlying data. He handled the move to high A very gracefully, and I think that he's just really solid. And yeah, I'm definitely in on Arroyo.
Yep, absolutely. All right, now Tampa Bay here, Chris. There were a lot of decent options here. This is a pretty good system. Who'd you end up going with?
Yeah, there were so many options. But yeah, I think ultimately landed on Trey Morgan, who did stumble a bit in double A, whose profile that I'm just not all that in on. It's like Tugboat, where I'm just not that in for fantasy purposes. But you can't argue with what Trey Morgan did this year. And even with a down bit in double A, he still was very impressive all season. He had 10 home runs and 23 doubles while slashing 324, 408, 483, and had a 158 WRC plus. I think it was the third highest WRC plus among all full season prospects. So the results were good all year. Again, the power's below average. Like, I don't think he's going to get to a ton of pop. It's like maybe 40 grade. You look at kind of his home run distribution. He had a couple in Asheville. I saw one of them. It was, you know, 290 wall in right field. And literally off the bat, I think I posted the video, but Morgan thought it was just a pop-up, and it literally just dropped over the wall. He had one in Greenville again. I saw a very hitter-friendly environment. Again, you can't write off all the home runs. Morgan's definitely a bat-to-ball guy, and it's really good bat-to-ball, and he's a good athlete. He's a great first baseman. For fantasy, though, I don't love the profile for fantasy purposes, especially for a first baseman that you really want power from. I don't think he's going to be much of a power bat, but still, Trey Morgan's season, very, very good, and certainly deserving of this title in a really good system. A system you could have gone a million ways.
Yeah, and I think I considered a million different players here. You could have gone Braden Taylor was one I considered. Even Aiden Smith, who didn't spend, you know, a ton of time here, but he finished this season with Tampa Bay, obviously, after coming over from Seattle. So considered him. If you look at the totality of his season, he was in the mix. Morgan, obviously, high floor guy, high average guy. Obviously, the power, though. So I ended up going with Carson Williams. I could have flipped a coin among four of these guys. They're all very similar. Xavier Isaac, obviously, in the mix as well. That he ended the season really poorly, which knocked him out of contention for me. But second straight 2020 year for Carson Williams. And really, it was pretty similar to last year. He stole more bags than last year. Played the same amount of games, actually, 115. Average and OBP were nearly identical. Slightly less slug this year, but similar strikeout and walk rates. K rate did go down a little bit, but basically almost copy and paste 2023 to 2024 here for Carson Williams, who spent the entire year in AA. So you probably see him at some point next year, next summer for Tampa Bay. So I went Carson Williams over to the Texas Rangers. There are a few for Texas as well, but landed on Alejandro Rosario, who I think is still getting undervalued a bit. I'm pulling up the look at the K minus walk rate leaderboards in the minor leagues. We'll go, we'll drop down to 100 innings here. And you're looking at, whoops, let me go over the right tab here. So strikeout minus walk rate leaderboards. I got dropped down even lower. He didn't have 100 innings pitched. But dropped down to 80 innings pitched as a threshold. He was number one. So for 80 innings pitched threshold, he goes Alejandro Rosario at 33.1%. Travis Sikora, 31%. Ryan Lobos, another Texas guy, 29.9%. Tugboat at 29.6%. And Zebby Matthews at 28.4%. That was the top five. 6 of 10, Casey Hunt, Ty Johnson, Logan Henderson, Cole Drake, and Jose Gonzalez. Two more Texas guys. So a lot of Texas guys on that list. But Rosario, 36.9% strikeout rate, 3.7% walk rate, with a 2.24 ERA, 0.93 whip, and a 1.49 FIP, 1.85 xFIP. It's a truly phenomenal year. This is a guy that didn't get a lot of good grades for his command and control coming into this year, but definitely made great strides there. And I don't think he has super high upside. I'd still say probably more SP4 range, but given the gains he's made with strike throwing and commanding his arsenal this year, he's got a good fastball slider combination and a four pitch arsenal overall. I'm definitely way more in on this profile than I was before the season started. And you look at that key minus walk rate is huge this year. Obviously number one, in all the minor leagues by over 2%. I should remind you, he was at 33.1 and Sikora was at 31%. And then all the others were below 30. So he solidly won that if he lowered that innings pitch threshold down to 80, because he was at 88.1 innings this year. Probably gets the bump to start next year at AA. Don't think we see him next year, but I wouldn't rule it out either. But definitely a sneaky good dynasty target right now that I just don't think is getting enough love.
Yeah, I mean, it's Rosario pretty easily for me too. And the system is really good. But Rosario was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball, top performers, and I think he's got all the intangibles to back it too. He was very impressive. Start I got to see of him, it's 3+ pitches pretty easily. Fastball, slider, splitter. The command is plus. He locates everything extremely well. He had 13 walks all season. I mean, he was completely mismanaged at Miami University. It was like absurd, like I think 70%+ fastball usage. And then he comes over to Texas, Oregon. Hey, we need to rework this usage a little bit. He's a top 50 prospect for me, definitely top 10 pitching prospect. I think he's got everything you want. 1.64 FIP in single A and a 1.31 FIP in high A, which is just absolutely nuts. And he bumped to double A for a playoff start, if I'm not mistaken. So he finally got that chance. I think Rosario's just really good.
Yeah, he definitely is. And in the year of all these breakout pitching prospects, he didn't get quite as much buzz as the rest of them. So yeah, definitely. I have him, I was trying to pull up here. I don't have him top 50 yet. I think I just rank pitchers a little bit lower in general than you do. But for pitching prospects, he is my number 10 right now, right behind Quinn Matthews. And who would have thought this year that I'd be having Alejandro Rosario ranked ahead of Cade Horton at the end of the year? Cade was a top 3-4 guy entering the year. I still have him pretty highly, but guys like Rosario and Quinn Matthews, Sikora, Kumar Rocker, all these guys have jumped him. But yeah, Rosario definitely maybe he is the minor league pitcher of the year. I don't know if he pitched enough innings to really garner that title, but definitely in that discussion without question. All right, Chris, one last system here. Let's round it out with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Certainly ending on the worst. It's just, it wasn't pretty at all. I searched for a while, debated a couple. I went with Alan Rodon, outfielder from the Jays. He's 24 years old. So he's an older prospect, but at the end of the day, I think he had the best season of any of the prospects in the org. All their pitchers were pretty much hurt. I looked at a couple of guys. Obviously, Kendry Rojas, he's didn't pitch enough. Victor Arias is somebody that I think is really underrated in the system, but Rodon was the most consistent all year. On-base machine, 391 OBP between double and triple A this year, 290 average, 136 WRC plus from both levels. He hit 16 home runs, not a huge power bat. He steal you some bags at 26 doubles, 4 triples, and 14 stolen bases. I think it's a super flashy profile, but I do think Rodon gets on base a lot. It's a solid feel to hit. And then I think you probably factor in the well-roundedness of the profile and how he's consistently performed. And I think it's got to be him. I think the contact skills have been definitely plus all year. It was 85% in double, goes to triple. It's 82% and 92% in zone with a low chase rate. EV's 90th percentile, close to MLB average. Okay, sign me up. I think that Rodon's pretty underrated. Still, not saying he's going to be a flashy prospect, but I do think he's a major league contributor and he's on that cusp of debuting. So I took Alan Rodon here.
Yeah, I almost went with Rodon and probably should have. This system, it's just not great right now. Aurelvis missed half the season with suspension. Namala turned it on late in the season, but it's pretty high K rate and was really bad the first part of the season, which kept him out here for me. Charles McAdoo, if he finished the season strong, probably was the guy, but he finished so poorly. And I still wanted to go with him a little bit too, but with how he ended the season, I just couldn't do it. Rodon, absolutely solid. No pitcher even was in consideration for me. As Chris mentioned, Rojas didn't really pitch enough. Tiedemann, who freaking knows with Tiedemann these days, but he only pitched 17 in the third innings this year. And so I landed on Jonathan Class A, but I don't love it. He's going to run. He's shown the willingness to run and run some more. He'll give you some speed. What does he give you with the bat? That's still the big question. There's some power in the profile, but is he going to be got us maybe 230, 240? Probably. I don't really think he's 260, 270, which is where he's been in the minor leagues. He's 257 this year in the minor leagues, but if he can give you 30-plus steals over a full year with double-digit home runs, that still has some value there. Rodon's absolutely safer. Probably the guy I should have gone with here, but I guess I'll go with Class A. He was already gotten a couple of shots with Toronto and just got recalled again recently. So we'll see if he can have a good last week here. But he's probably a Jose Siri type with less power, more speed going forward, something like that. Guy that you'll pick up off the waiver wire a couple times a year when he's hot, but overall it's going to be probably pretty maddening to roster a guy like Class A. But there we go. Those are the American League prospects of the year. To recap, Baltimore, both of us went with Mayo. Boston, both went with Christian Campbell. White Sox, both with Noah Schultz. Cleveland, both with Matt Wilkinson. Detroit, Chris went Hyu Lee. And I went Trey Sweeney. Houston, Chris went Anderson Brito. I went Shea Whitcomb. Kansas City, Chris went Noah Cameron. I went Gavin Cross. Angels, we both went with Caden Dana. Minnesota, Peyton Ellis and Zebby Matthews for me. New York Yankees, Chris, Ben Shields, me, Spencer Jones. Oakland, both went Colby Thomas. Seattle, both went Michael Arroyo. Tampa Bay, Chris went Trey Morgan. I went Carson Williams. Texas, both Alejandro Rosario. And Toronto, Chris, Alan Rodon, and Jonathan Classe for me. That will wrap us up. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again on Thursday with the National League edition of this episode. But until then, everyone take care.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.